Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you with us. Welcome to the FedEx Cup Playoffs. It is the beginning of a three-week stretch for the PGA Tour that will culminate in crowning a season-long winner through the FedEx Cup at Eastlake. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. We're going to talk about the AIG Women's Open a little bit today. We'll touch a little bit on LIV, I think, because Bryson shot 58 and what that means and whether it matters and all that kind of stuff. No guests this week. And I kind of want to bring you up to speed on where I've been the last couple of weeks because travel this summer has been crazy. But so last week I was in French Lick, Indiana again. Last time I was there about 6 weeks ago, I think it was, I was there to play in the Pro-Am for the Senior LPGA Championship as a guest of a good buddy of mine, contributor to the network, Brendan Sweeney. We're going to Ireland together in a few weeks with Club Choice Ireland. If you want to check them out, they're clubchoiceireland.com. Put together a great itinerary for us, kind of like on the fly, which was really cool of them to do. We're going to play Port Marnock and County Louth and some really cool places, K Club. We're going to have a great time. But this time was part of kind of a media trip and a media fam trip. So it's kind of a bigger group, usually like 4, 6, 8, 12 people, somewhere in that range. Kind of depends on the trip and the person who organized it. But it was to French Lick Resort. And it was to experience French Lick, which obviously I've been there a bunch of times. I'm a big fan of the resort. They've advertised with us. They're great people. I feel like I know a lot of the people there. It's kind of like a second home in many ways. I was doing kind of the count in my head, you know, how many days I've spent in French Lick in the last, oh, let's call it 6 years. And it's probably been as much time or darn close to as much time as the days that I have spent in my parents' home, which is an hour away. And that's not because I don't spend time with my parents. Love my parents. They're great. But they tend to kind of come over our house. We don't go over their house as much. And so it feels like, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it feels like I've been to French Lick more complete days than I have my parents' home. And I've, again, gotten to know the people there. And it's kind of been built around this, what is now the Epson Tour event that they've had there. First, they had the Donald Ross course. It's called the Donald Ross Classic. And then a couple of years ago, they moved it to the Dye course. And the event on the Ross course had kind of run itself. And there was a discussion between what was then, I still think it was then, the Symetra Tour and French Lick about whether they continue this relationship. And seemingly out of nowhere came an agreement to continue the event for multiple years and that they would do it on the Dye course, the kind of bigger, brawnier, maybe a little bit better known course, or at least kind of flashier course of the two full 18s that they have, and that they would do so to present the biggest purse in Epson Tour history, $335,000. And that, you know, I think it's like $50,500 or $50,250 or something like that goes to the winner. So, you know, a large amount of money, life-changing money. And this was the last year for it. And that's because, in part, the Korn Ferry Tour is coming. French Lick's going to host the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. There's some kind of political drama to that on the end of the former host, which is Dormy Network and Victoria National. And I was a Dormy Network member. I played Victoria National a couple times. Really enjoyed it there. But for whatever reason, that relationship isn't going well. And so French Lick is now stepping in to host with the Dye course. It's going to be a great opportunity for the resort. But we were there to kind of play in the Pro-Am and with some friends who hadn't been there to French Lick. And it was really weird. And this is where I'm getting to with this. It was really weird going back with people who I knew hadn't been, but I knew pretty well. Some friends of mine from the golf world, golf media world, were a part of this trip, and none of them had ever been. And I felt like, in some instances, definitely not all, but in a few instances, I was kind of a tour guide. I wanted them to see certain things that I really like about French Lick and West Baden, the adjoining town resort, with the place with it's an incredible dome. And we drove into town. You know, we flew into Louisville, kind of drove through some cornfields and back roads, and find ourselves going into what you go into West Baden first, which is super small town, and then right next to it is French Lick, which is also a small town but bigger. I said, well, I want to take you to West Baden. You got to see this. Even if we don't see this all trip, you got to see this. And I'm describing it to them. They're like, oh, okay. Because maybe I didn't do the best job describing it, or what they thought I was describing was completely different than what they got. And I take them into the West Baden Hotel. It's this incredible dome hotel that was built in like less than 200 days, like 1907 or something. And it is a remarkable piece of art, remarkable piece of architecture. Take them in, they were blown away. They could not believe that this was here. They'd never heard of it. And what I was describing was much grander than they thought I was describing. And for whatever reason, that, I don't know, kind of made me proud. It made me proud to know a place, get to know a place a little bit differently, and feel confident enough to take them somewhere and go, hey, I've been here a bunch of times here. I really like it here. You should check this out. And, you know, I kind of feel that way about some other place. I feel that way about Myrtle Beach. I mean, this is where I am now. I'm in Myrtle Beach recording this here for a couple weeks as I'm here visiting my sister-in-law with my kids and wife. And that's one of those places, too, where I feel like, all right, I've gotten to know you. That's another kind of home away from home. And I have really taken a whole lot of value in the last few years, really my adult life, but especially in the last couple of years, of trying and finding places that I really like, or my family and I like, enough to consider a second home without actually owning property there. That could change someday, but not today. And French Lick has kind of become like that for me, a place where just, you know, I told my wife when I came back, I was like, I would actually like to take you to French Lick someday. You could see all the place I go twice a year or once or twice a year and experience it for yourself, because I think it's pretty special. And it's the part that is thanks to golf. That is thanks to golf, getting to know people like that and forming relationships and them being kind enough to think enough of me to welcome me back repeatedly and to work with me as a media partner and stuff like that. So it's formed great relationships there by being there. I mean, Brendan and I are going to Ireland, and that's because I went on a fam to French Lick like 6 years ago. And now we've played in pro-ams. We get together. He's met my kids. I've seen his daughter play lacrosse. We're going to go international together here. I mean, there's all kinds of cool stuff that happens because of golf, and you just never know. And that's why I feel so great about playing the game. And if you tell me I get to play with somebody new, I'm excited about it, because you never know who you're going to meet. And I'm very much engaged in the game of golf because of people. I mean, I love playing golf. I love the challenge of it. Don't get me wrong, but it's the people for me that makes golf really special. And I've found that in everywhere that I would consider a home away from home for golf. I mentioned French Lick as a resort property, but Myrtle Beach is a place. Western Pennsylvania is a place. Derry, Pennsylvania, which is right where my in-laws live. La Trobe, Johnstown. I joined Sunny Hanna because I thought enough of the golf course and those people to see if they would let me in. And they have, as a national member. An incredible deal. And an incredible golf course. I put some money into it. It's great. It's an awesome community. And then I feel the same way about Old Barnwell down in Aiken, South Carolina. It's going to open up in, for at least, quote-unquote, 18-hole preview play in the middle of September. And that's a totally different community than the others, but one that's very vibrant already. And I'm really looking forward to spending a lot of time there over, hopefully, many, many years. And I think that's the thing I've sought through golf. I mean, I've had some wonderful scores, some great rounds of golf over the years, but I could happily be a 10 handicap or a 20 handicap if I got to meet the same kinds of people that I've met because of this game. And that extends into golf business, especially the people that I've met in the industry that are true golfers. Like they're not just in the industry because it's a skill set they like, whether that's, you know, marketing or public relations or what have you, that they're in it because they love golf and they wanted a job in this industry. Those are so many awesome connections, and that has become the foundation of my adult life. So All this to say that, one, if you get a chance, go to French Lick, Indiana. Spend some time there. Spend a weekend there. Go play the Ross. Go play the Die. I played the Valley Lynx for the first time, which is a 9 holes of Tom Bendelow design. It used to be 18. It was the first golf course that French Lick had that they opened up. And they eventually took away 9 holes to build out some of the rest of the resort. And there's a plan to put in another 9, kind of put in a modernized 9 along with it, which would be pretty cool. But I really loved the Valley because it's super chill. It's actually 3,600 yards from the tip, so it's not a pushover. No, we didn't play the tips, but you could play it that far. The par threes are tricky. It's got enough short holes so you can score. It's just a different atmosphere, and I really like that about it. It's a contrast to the Ross, which is very, very Donald Ross. I mean, restored to Ross architecture. Lots of severe places to miss, but also wide open, true Ross. And the Die, which feels like at times the most difficult golf course on the planet, even though it's not. And you'll see that if you get to check out the results from the Epson Tour leaderboard. I mean, they tore it up if you gave them the opportunity. And for what it's worth, we played our scramble. And we have 4 scratch dudes in this scramble team, along with our pros, Teresa Toscano. She's from Spain. She was awesome. I've not laughed that hard in a long time between all of our jokes and the good time that we had. Caddy Munster was cool too. Shout out to him. Just this kind of surly old Aussie dude who kind of looked like John Lennon in a way, but with gray hair. And we shot 14 under, 58, and we lost by 2. Shows you how hard it is to win a scramble, I suppose. I've played, I think, in 4 scrambles this year. 2 in the French Lick area. So this one we shot 58. The last one I played in, we shot 56, lost by 1. I played in a scramble this year with friends from our school community, for our school fundraiser. We shot 57, I believe, and lost by 1. And then played in another, I think we shot 59 or something, and that also lost. Like all second place finishes. Which shows you how tough it is to win a scramble, whether it's someone's pencil or just someone has a great day. Either, I've seen both happen. So, pretty wild. But great, great experience. It just is another one of those reminders of how special this sport is. The community that you can build because of it. And the places it can take you. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break for our friends on GNN Radio. We'll be back. We'll talk a little bit about the FedEx Cup playoffs. Talk a little bit about Bryson DeChambeau's 58, and we'll continue right here on the 19th Hole Golf Show. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the 19th Hole Golf Show. It's good to have you here with us this week. If you want to check us out on GNN Radio and you're not listening on GNN Radio, head over to the iHeart app. You can download it for your mobile device, or you can go over to iHeart.com and check out there. You can just search GNN Radio or Golf News Net Radio on your device. You'll find it. It'll be there. It's also on the golfnewsnet.com/GNN-radio. You can follow on your favorite platform and catch it all there. Also, I want to tell you about our friends at Swanies. We have been working with Swanies this year. They've been the clothing I've worn on my daily show, which is 2 off the 1st, and really any video, news video we've done this year. Their apparel's great. I love their polos. I really love their hoodies. They now have t-shirt hoodies. All the apparel is stylish, but it's not gaudy by any stretch of the imagination. Nice and classy. Lots of florals in their prints I like. They just came out with a new collection, kind of centered around shades of red, which I think is actually pretty cool. It's a little bit more of the lighter shade of red. Really like. The hoodies are spectacular. I can't wait for fall to actually wear them. You can get a promo code with us, GolfNewsNet25, GolfNewsNet25. You'll save 25% on your first order. I think it might actually apply to every order, but we'll at least say the first order. So go to swanies.co, swanies.co, and check them out. Use that promo code GolfNewsNet25. You'll save 25%. It's all very reasonably priced to begin with, but saving 25% is even better. Okay, let's talk about the playoffs. Let's talk about the FedEx Cup playoffs. And I want to kind of preface everything I say in this segment, and frankly, about when we talk about LIV Golf. with the idea that this has been, I think, for a lot of people, an exhausting year plus, really, since LIV became a public thing, that golf can be really tiring to watch. And there's been a precipitous drop-off in TV ratings for golf events. And that's across the board. The designated events did well for the most part because of, by comparison to what they were, the fields they had. But the majors have seen a pretty substantial ding, and frankly, tournaments that used to kind of have a little bit of niche intrigue. I'm thinking about the Deer, maybe the 3M Open, tournaments like that. Even though the fields may have been a little bit better, 3Ms would be significantly better. Even the Wyndham's significantly better. Feels like the public has tuned them out. And as we've talked about on Two Off the First, and maybe here sometimes, but LIV Golf's ratings never been good. They've always been bad. And I feel like that has obviously been reflected in the Nielsen ratings, but I just kind of wanted to throw it out there on Twitter to get a sense of, anecdotally, what people think. Because, I mean, most people who follow me are probably pretty hardcore golf fans, right? Why would you follow some random dude on Twitter you've never seen on TV in the last 10 years, but does a website and a radio station, and hopefully soon a TV station. We'll talk about that someday soon. But just some random guy you follow talk about golf on the internet, right? So you got to be pretty hardcore about it. But the overwhelming number of people either said they watched the same, but most said they watched less. Almost half, if not more than half, said they watched less golf this year. Some just watched a little bit less. Some have just zonked out and not watched any golf except the majors. And I'm curious what that will mean moving forward, but I feel like we had an interesting moment for all of the tumult and change and money being thrown around at the Wyndham Championship. So Justin Thomas has played poor golf really throughout the year, really since winning the PGA Championship last year. And he ended the year 8th in the official world golf ranking on the back. Hey, you earn 100 points and they don't fall off for 13 weeks. You earn it in May. You're probably going to be in good stead. Well, those points started to come off and he wasn't earning anything to replace them. And fell down pretty quickly, you know, into the 20s, into the mid-20s. Looks like he's on the outside of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And he decides, okay, well, I need to go and earn these points. I need to go get into the playoffs, because if I don't get into the playoffs, I'm not making the Ryder Cup team. And that's the thing I want. And so he says, okay, I'm going to go play the 3M Open. Goes and plays the 3M Open. That's bad. Real bad. Says, okay, I'm going to play the Wyndham Championship. My last chance. Got to get in the playoffs. I get into the top 70 in the standings again in the playoffs. Then I give myself a chance to get to East Lake. Maybe if I get to East Lake, I impress Zach Johnson. Zach Johnson gives me a pick, and I play the Ryder Cup. And I think there was a true consequence to the playoffs this year. True consequence. Because every other year we've had these playoffs, going back to 2007, which is hard to believe this thing has been around. This will be the 17th year of the FedEx Cup playoffs. But in those 17 years, the 16 prior, you just had to get in the top 125 in points, and you were in. Now, the cutoff got brutal once it went to three events, going from 125 to 70 to 30. Those were big drops. But in the initial years where you had four events, 125 to 100 to 70 to 30, I mean, you have plenty of time to figure it out if you were a good player. You were going to get in the playoffs, even if you had a rough year. You gave yourself a chance. This year was much more brutal, right? 55 fewer players get in the playoffs, 70, 50, 30. But there were also some consequences. So we don't know what exactly the fall format's going to be, but everybody who didn't get in the playoffs is basically going to have to fight for an opportunity to finish in the top 125, it seems. Maybe it's top 100. I assume it's top 125. We haven't heard that yet, but assume top 125. And where you finish determines how you get into events. But basically, everybody who gets into the playoffs this year in the top 70 is going to get in every event that's not designated. Now they're going to call them signature events. And that's way different to me than just saying, okay, you get to keep your card if you get in the playoffs for 125 players. I don't know why it feels that way, but it feels like the next stage of playoffs also bolsters the meaning of the first, which is if you get in the top 50, then you get into every designated slash signature event next year. That means your earning potential goes up dramatically if you get into the top 50, right? If you're in the worse than 50th, then you might get into some signature events on the basis of how you play in the in-between events. They're trying to set that up. We don't know exactly what all that looks like yet, but that's what they've said at the tour. And now all of a sudden, if you're not in the top 50, if you're cut next week or this week as a result of what happens in Memphis, you are going to have to play more often to get a chance to play in all of these big money, $20 million tournaments. And that's a big ask. That's a big difference of going from playing on somewhat on easy street, being able to kind of dictate your schedule because you're probably in the majors. They're not signature events, but you're probably in the majors. If you're in the signature events, you got, what, a dozen of them to work off of. Probably in the playoffs, or at least you're looking toward the playoffs to play at least one or two events. And you're getting extra points by being in all of those signature events. So it makes it kind of tough to kick you out of that loop. Now Justin Thomas is looking, he looks on the outside of that and says, well, if I can't even get in the playoffs, I can't even do that. There's no guarantee I get to do any of these signature events next year. And now he fails to make the playoffs. Comes up one shot shy, clangs off the flagstick with a pitch on 18 that birdie would have given, I think it was for birdie, pretty sure it was for birdie. But that pitch would have given him the one stroke he needed to leapfrog Ben Griffin, who turned out to be number 70, would have gotten him into the playoffs. And that one shot could have been the difference between going into the top 50, top 30, Ryder Cup, access to hundreds of millions of dollars of purses automatically. It's a big deal. And I think it mattered because we've seen heartache of trying to get in the top 125, but you knew full well most players who were outside, you know, the top 90 really were never going to advance to the next stage. That very rarely do more than three or four players ever move in or out in these early stages of the playoffs. That might change now that it's a 20-person cut, right? That could be pretty substantially modified. There could be some significant movement here this week. But it felt like the first time a superstar felt that pain. And I think that's good for the playoffs. I think that's good for the concept that it's not just a walk-in for the best players. Now, that might change with the concept of signature events and the elevated points and the no cuts, even though Tigers, Jacks, and Arnie's event will have a cut, 70 or 75 or 80 players down to 50. Like, how bad can you be? And then again, thought the same thing about the playoffs, right? So there's a lot of, I think, on the line here now, monetarily. Now, that means something to the players, right? That doesn't necessarily mean as much to us. The money thing has been truly off-putting in all of this process. Obviously, LIV and the Saudis have thrown truly billions of dollars at golf and are prepared to throw billions more, whether the agreement works out with the PGA Tour or they just keep running LIV Golf or whatever. And that to me, along with just out of thin air creating $20 million tournaments across the board, changing the entire structure of golf around that money, all of that is off-putting. I think that is for the better, that there is kind of a clear line of demarcation of playing your way up and around and through the PGA Tour schedule. I think that is a good thing. Conceptually, interest-wise, fan-wise, I'm not sure. I haven't seen that proof yet. Obviously, we've seen the dip in ratings for non-signature slash designated events. We have seen, frankly, less interest in a bunch of different forms of golf this year at the professional level. And so I'm not convinced that rejiggering the schedule around majors and the signature events to kind of work in tandem helps, because you know, you have the majors, you have these one big event a month, and then there's usually like one other event that keeps you engaged. Might not be the best event, but maybe you like the course, maybe you like the history of it, whatever. Well, now it's going to be set up where you have these 2 and 3 week sprints of lots of good events. You have two, let's take the example of next year. You've got Riviera, you've got Phoenix, which is not designated, was this year, but won't be next year, won't be a signature event next year, and then Pebble, which will be, all in a row. Three very big events. Phoenix doesn't need the juice of a $20 million purse. They've got the juice of being the freaking Phoenix Open. So three big events in a row, very popular ones. Well, will people tune in hardcore for 3 weeks in a row? Or will they get tired after two? What happens after that? Does the audience precipitously drop otherwise? I really don't know how that's going to play out. But I hope that the structural changes to the schedule make it more appealing in the long haul and offset the changes to the finances that I think do put a lot of people off. I don't know. I'm still really torn about all of this. Obviously, I'm against the Saudi funding source. If that agreement comes together, what does that mean? How do I deal with that? As in my personal view, obviously my professional view, I cover golf for a living, whatever happens. So how do you rectify those two? But this kind of feeling this year of, yeah, but I'm not that interested. And I know professionally I have to be engaged, but personally I don't have to be as invested in it. And my investment in golf has really been more what we talked about in the first segment, playing golf, spending time with people, maybe re-engaging with equipment a little bit, those types of things. And I wonder if that's true for a lot of people who have played this game for a long time, or for a relatively long time, and maybe got in because of professional golf, or are into professional golf as well. Like, yeah, just kind of put that to the side. Re-engage with your own game. But that all said, I do think that the modifications to the playoffs are a good thing. I think that the notion that you're not just automatically in, even if you sleep through the season, is a good thing. I think the financial incentives are really the only thing the tour can offer, because they can't offer the majors, right? They can't offer a major championship. So that has an impact on how players perceive their livelihood, but I don't think it has a very obvious impact on a player's history or a player's legacy. To the average fan, we're still figuring all that out, even though this thing's been around now in its 17th year and maybe has taken on increasing importance over time, still put it against the players, even much less the four majors, and it pales in comparison. So the only incentive the tour can really muster, and frankly needs to muster because of the Saudis, is financial in nature, and that makes it extremely tricky for the tour, because they want to offer legacy, they want to offer history. That's a whole talking point of Jay Monahan's that turned out to blow up in his face. But the only thing they've really got is dollars, and so if there are consequences to those dollars, maybe they hope that means something. But if there are consequences to just access to being considered one of the best, I think that's what they're hoping we will take all of this as, is the consequences, the cutoffs of the playoffs are really, are you elite or not, instead of how much money can you earn. And I'm very curious if that clicks. I'm very curious if that will click. We shall see. But I thought it was very interesting to watch, at least for once, the Wyndham, and I watch the Wyndham every year, but very interesting to watch it for once and try to see what that might mean if someone like Justin Thomas didn't get to the playoffs. Someone like Hideki Matsuyama didn't get to the playoffs. He did. Adam Scott. Guys like that, where you're like, well, this is a cutoff. This could mean something. But you're still going to have a bunch of players who, frankly, you don't consider world class or an elite player that made the playoffs because they had a very consistent season. So the idea of weighing all of these tournaments the same, 500 points, the Oppos are 300, there's no more WGCs, but 600 points for the majors to the winner, that's not enough of a scale. So I think we're going to see an adjustment here next year that may make it a little bit more representative of the kind of year that you have. But at the same time, it also may make it more representative of the access that you have to start the year. That, I'm not sure works. So, lots to come there, but at least for a few fleeting hours on a Sunday, the FedEx Cup playoffs worked. All right, we're going to go and take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Bryson DeChambeau's 58 and some other things this week. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balanchine. It's great to have you here with us. Final segment for this week. We're only going to do three this week. We have no guest. We're back to a guest next week. I have a couple of cool interviews in the can, but we kind of want to space those out a little bit and not just use them all at once. So this is an interviewless show this week. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Bryson DeChambeau and his 58. So probably not watching live golf. Most people don't. But they started early on Sunday morning for their third and final round at the Greenbrier, which is a former PGA Tour venue. It's owned by a guy named Jim Justice. He is the West Virginia governor. He is a two-term West Virginia governor. He used to be a Democrat when it was okay to be a Democrat in West Virginia. Joe Manchin excluded, of course. Then Donald Trump became president. And almost immediately, Jim Justice became a Republican and has since obviously done pretty well for himself politically in the state. But he also owns the Greenbrier Resort. He bought that at a very, very low price, considering its history. Put a lot of money into it, created a casino, which helped drive some revenue for it, and really built a property that was built on, you know, $300 and $400 a night, if not higher, hotel rooms. Built up real estate around the resort that had never really been built up. Put some money into the golf courses. Was going to build a golf course on a mountaintop, but that kind of got cut off by the recession. And that never really came to fruition. But he is worth, I'm going to guess, in the area of $750 to $1 billion. I mean, $750 million to $1 billion. I mean, he's got a lot of money to work with. And wanted to be involved with golf. Got involved with the PGA Tour. They had an event there that changed names over the years, eventually became a military tribute at the Greenbrier. And they had an unfortunate flood. It kind of did some serious damage to the old white and the property. And they had kind of lost their way with the tour. And they were like, yeah, they let it run out. They let the contract run out. The last year of the event, I think it was, Kevin Chappell shot 59, second 59 recorded in the tournament's history. Stuart Appleby did it in 2010. And goes off the schedule, and they're just kind of sitting out there waiting for something to happen. You know, do they go into the LPGA? Do they try to host a major championship? What do they try to do? And then LIV Golf comes along, and this negotiation was probably not that long, but because Justice is a Donald Trump guy, big Donald Trump guy, political ethos. I don't know if he really cares for the guy. That doesn't matter. But the political ethos is there. And Trump obviously has a relationship with the Saudis. Made a whole bunch of money probably. Who knows how much money, but probably a lot of money from the Saudis to host these events that he has with LIV Golf. And so after the first season, and they kind of alluded to it in some of their video packages with little Easter eggs. It's like, hey, that's the Greenbrier. Greenbrier's coming. And that turned out to be the case. So Greenbrier, which has hosted a bunch of NFL teams' training camps over the years, they host tennis events, I mean, all kinds of different stuff. They're on the schedule for this year. And I didn't really know what to expect from this event. I mean, I know Greenbrier's old. I've played the old white a couple times. It's a very nice golf course. It was restored by Keith Foster before he went to jail for selling sawfish to an FBI agent. But did a really nice job. It's also not a particularly difficult golf course, as you know, having 259s will tell you. And it's one you can go low on. So you've got this final round. They started early for LIV, like 9:30 in the morning. They usually would run it like 1 to 6 because they do their shotgun thing. And they've got 47 players, 48 players. Someone had bowed out. But yeah, you know, they've got their players all ready to roll. And they do it in the morning, because they're expecting bad weather in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, which is about 4 hours from my house. And They have Bryson DeChambeau as part of it. Matthew Wolf's part of it. David Puig, I should say that better, is part of it. A lot of folks kind of at the top of the leaderboard you really haven't seen much of on LIV this year. I mean, Matthew Wolf got kicked off of Brooks Koepka's team because they didn't like some workouts or something, and then they came to some truce because there's no system of cutting people in LIV. Even though they say they can, they don't. But they kick off early. DeChambeau, I think, was in the final group. Pretty sure the quote-unquote final group, the one that tees off from number one. Like, they play in ordinal fashion instead of some other, one of the other holes. And he gets out to a hot start. Plays great. Sets up great. I mean, has an incredible round. Gets to the last hole. Par for 59. He's way up. He's going to win the tournament. Like, that's been decided. Wins by, I think, 6 in the end. But he makes this, 40-45-foot putt. Not for birdie on the last hole. It's par 3. And wins a golf tournament. Jumps up in the air. I mean, it was a pretty impressive vertical. I've got to give him that. I wasn't watching live. I didn't even really think about it yesterday. And I saw it on my timeline. Here's Bryson shooting 58. And wins a golf tournament. Nice vertical, nice moment for him. He had not won on LIV, hadn't really played particularly well on LIV. His father passed away last year, so that probably had some impact on his play. Fair to say, a significant amount, if not a substantial amount. And he was just starting to play better. He played pretty well this year, I think, in the spots that we saw him in the mixed population events, the majors. And so for him, very nice moment. Very nice for him. It was a little bit rainy. Seemed like there was a modest crowd there to take in the moment, which is cool for him. But then it seemed like how to take that went in a couple of different directions. So, I mean, my first take is, okay, it's LIV. I'm not especially interested in it. Not to dismiss 58. 58's incredible. But I had my best round ever this year, and it came on an easy golf course. The Old White's pretty easy golf course. So do you take a whole lot from that, knowing it's your best round ever, if the golf course was pretty easy? I mean, yes. Still shot that round. Just was on an easy golf course. So I'm sure Bryson took that. So check that box. Do you take solace, or do you kind of lose some value that it happened at the first golf course in major golf history, major elite level professional golf, men or women, to give up at least 3 rounds under 60? How do you feel about that? That's not as great compared to a more difficult golf course. Then what about strokes gained? Obviously, it's a much smaller field than LIV. There are a whole ton of players who are frankly just not competitive on LIV. There are 15 to 20 decent players to good players on LIV. Let's say 20 good ones, just kind of giving you a round number. Well, 28 of them are not very good. But he beat that field average by a little over, I think it was 8.5-ish on strokes gained. That's a great round, but it doesn't even crack the top 10 rounds strokes gained-wise on major tours this year. So do you take something away from that? Still 58, but the next best round was 63 or 62 or whatever it was. So does that mean as much? I don't know. Same thing with the Korn Ferry Tour, where they've had a couple 59s this year. One was on a day where everyone went low. One was on a day where it was almost impossible to go low. So which one's more valuable? Well, it's the one where everyone struggled and you kicked butt that day. And so it's still 58, right? I mean, you and I are never going to shoot 58. If you're listening, you shot below 60 for 18 holes, then congratulations to you. Please let me know. I'd love to tell you how great you are at golf. But you can email me too if you've done it for 9 holes or 12 holes. Doesn't matter. Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Get a hold of me. Happy to talk golf with you anytime. But I don't know. What does this do for LIV? I guess it feels like that's my question, right? They've had some interesting moments this year. You had the Chase Koepka hole in one. You've had Gooch go back to back. You've had this. They had the moment last year in, what was it, the Chicago area where Dustin Johnson won the playoff. That was what walk-off eagle. That was interesting. And they have these moments where, it's still golf. You kind of geek out over great golf or interesting golf. And that takes away from the hang-ups people have about LIV that may not be Saudi investment related, right? Like that's 54 holes. That's a shotgun start. Well, 58's 58, man. Like if you don't worry about where the money is coming from, and that's not an issue for you personally, then one great round is a great round, but it's also just one round. So does it mean anything? Does it offer any financial value to live? Do people get suddenly more invested in live because of this? If the whole thing doesn't work out with the PGA Tour, is this kind of a watershed moment where maybe the Saudis go, well, I don't want to deal with this. You know, the lawsuit's done. We were all going to lose in that. Maybe we just keep running this thing and see if it can work out. Who knows? I'm very curious about that. Very curious about that perspective. I mean, obviously, we talk a lot about golf business here. At Golf News Net and Two of the First, et cetera, Green Shoots. I mean, we've got podcasts and a significant space dedicated to that kind of coverage, that kind of prism of golf. But as a fan, I don't. It's not going to like make me tune into Bedminster next week. I mean, Bedminster is going to be quite interesting from a non-golf perspective. Whatever your political persuasion is, the former president of the United States has been indicted 3 times in a few months, and maybe looking at a fourth. And they're going to play a major golf tournament at one of his courses this week. I mean, that's a story. Right? What happens? What's the atmosphere like? Very, very interested to see that. But I don't know if I'm thinking, oh, well, all of a sudden Liv's so great because Bryson had a great round. I think squarely Liv as a product is centered around 6-7 guys. Brooks, Dustin, Cam Smith, Bryson. There's your 4. Obviously, Taylor Gooch had a great year. There's 5. Go find me a couple of others that have had a pretty decent year. I'd probably put Patrick Reed in there. He's still very, very competitive. And, that's kind of the extent of it. The others are, whatever. So do you tune in to watch those 6 guys take on, mostly people that aren't playing as well or just not as competitive or not a name or shouldn't be there at all? I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with it. But I'm going to give, obviously, kudos to Bryson DeChambeau. Like, the guy shot a 58. At the end of the day, as I think John Rahm put it on Twitter, doesn't matter what tour you shoot, where you're playing, you shoot 58 to win, you've done something. And so, kudos to him for doing something, I guess. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the 19th Hole Golf Show. Thanks for spending some time with us. Appreciate it. If you catch us on a platform, let you do so, please leave us a review. 5 stars would be appreciated, but you can leave your honest review, of course. Leave a comment, helps us reach more people. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Happy to talk golf with you anytime, whether it's anything we talk about on the show or otherwise. Travel tips, handicap advice, sandbagging advice, whatever you need. Happy to be there for you. I'm also on Twitter, Threads, and Instagram @RyanBallingy. Follow me there. And Golf News Net's on all of those services too @GolfNewsNet. We'll be back next week with another show. We'll start talking through the playoffs. Talk AIG Women's Open, which you didn't even get to here. Alton Heath hosts, which is going to be a great week. It'll be really fun. It's the final major of the year for any major tour. So we close out major season this week with a little bit of coffee golf and the AIG Women's Open. Very excited about that because I think it's a very wide open event. So we'll touch a little bit of that on our golf betting podcast, The Press. And we'll get through any other news of the week. Thanks so much for your time once again. This has been Ryan Ballingy here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this weekend next. Saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.